For several weeks, we have discussed the Bible laws on money, trade, interest, debt, gold and silver, and so on, and we have seen that God has some specific principles which a just and righteous society should follow. And it is rather easy to see that we today are not following the divine laws. As to the laws, we have found that interest, called in the Bible usury, is forbidden on debts. No payments above the principal of the loan are to be charged. We've also seen that Israelites are commanded to lend money to poor people who need it for the necessities of life. There is no command nor law that anyone lend money to anyone except for necessities, and whatever is lent is to be without interest. The law requires that every 7 years, all debts in the nation are to be canceled. This logical law would, of course, have prevented the accumulation of debts such as we have in America, where the present generation is paying interest on money borrowed by their parents, and money lending and perpetual debt has become a method of conquest. The money lenders, by lending large amounts of credit to individuals, businesses, and governmental agencies, thereby obtain a claim on all future earnings of the entire working population. In perpetuity, they hope. That has happened to us because we do not follow the law on usury or cancellation of all debts. There is also a 49th year cancellation of all debts called the Year of Jubilee in Leviticus 25, which we did not cover. I am saving that for later, since Bible prophecy shows us that eventually such a jubilee year will be proclaimed in America. All debts will be canceled, and the moneylenders and the usurers will be banished from the nation. That jubilee verse, by the way, is the one on our liberty bell, Leviticus 25:10, which begins, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." One radio preacher recently caused quite a fuss about the bell given to America by the Queen of England because it did not contain that verse. But I have never heard him explain just what that verse means. I suspect he does not know. Anyway, we'll cover it in some detail in a later broadcast. Last week we were reading in Isaiah 10 about the Assyrian who in verse 14 of Isaiah 10 boasts, "My hand hath found as a nest the riches of the people, and as one gathereth eggs that are left, have I gathered all the earth." This boast indicates control over all the wealth of the people of the world. That control today is almost complete in the hand of the international banking and money-lending institutions of New York, London, Paris, Switzerland, and their subsidiaries. They have more power than nations, and fit quite closely that which is described in Revelation 17 as, quote, "that great city which reigneth over the kings," or the government of the earth. All right, back to the Assyrian in Isaiah 10, this prophetic entity which was apparently to have control of the wealth and riches of the world in the end of this age. In verses 1 and 2, God rebukes the Assyrian for his unrighteous decrees or laws which rob the poor, the widow, and the orphan. Then in verse 5, God calls him, quote, "The rod in mine anger and the staff in their hand is mine indignation." So this Assyrian is not only more than one person. Notice the plural phrase, "their hand." It is a people being used by God as a rod, or a means of chastisement against the people who are described in verse 6 as an hypocritical nation and the people of my wrath, and then named specifically in verse 20 as Jacob and Israel. So the people upon whom judgment is being brought by this Assyrian is Israel. The rod is a people which rob and plunders the people of Israel, the rod here called the Assyrian. And for new Bible students, one doctrine very little taught in the modern church is the doctrine of chastisement and judgment upon Israel for disobedience of God's law. In Amos 3, God said to Israel, "Hear this word that the Lord has spoken against you, O children of Israel, against the whole family which I brought up from the land of Egypt, saying, You only have I known of all the families of the earth. Therefore I will punish you for all your iniquities." Other people suffer the consequence of sin, but it is only Israel which God deliberately and specifically brings enemy nations against when Israel sins against Him. Daniel understood this, and that the things which would come upon a disobedient Israel were already written in the books of the law and the prophets. In Daniel 9, Daniel prays for all Israel, confesses their sin, and then says in verse 11, "Yea, all Israel have transgressed thy law, even by departing, that they might not obey thy voice." And then Daniel tells what was happening. "Therefore the curse is poured upon us, and the oath that is written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, because we have sinned against him." In verse 14, Daniel says, "Therefore hath the Lord watched upon the evil and brought it upon us." The evil, or the curse, to which Daniel was referring, of course, was Israel's captivity under Assyria and Babylon. Daniel knew it was written in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 and a score of other places that if Israel disobeyed God, God would raise up alien nations and actually bring those aliens against Israel's land and take them captive. So when we read in Isaiah 10 of a prophetic future Assyrian, and God calls it the rod in his hand, and that their staff or their power is God's indignation, then we know this is to be a great power raised up by God to come against and chastise the Israel people in the end of this age. Let's read on about this Assyrian, and we'll see if it fits what is happening in Saxon Israel, in Europe, America, and Canada. Verse 6, he says they would come against this hypocritical nation, and the very meaning of that word says that it would be a nation which must be professing to believe in God, but is not obeying his word. We certainly are an hypocritical nation. The last part of verse 6 says God is sending this Assyrian to take a spoil and to take a prey and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. In simple words, God is going to allow this Assyrian to rob and to plunder his hypocritical Israel people and to rule over them as if they were dirt under his feet. Now this could not be fulfilled by a gang of common criminals sweeping across the land and holding up grocery stores and filling stations. It must be something much more effective and much more powerful than that, as we'll see in a few moments. But let us read on. Verse 7 implies the Assyrian has a different reason for what he does than God's reason for allowing him to do it. "Howbeit he," meaning the Assyrian, "howbeit he meaneth not so, neither doth his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off nations, not a few." God's purpose is to allow him to plunder Israel for chastisement of Israel, but the Assyrian's apparent intention is to destroy nations. Verse 8, "For he saith, Are not my princes altogether kings?" In other words, are not my subordinates literally as powerful as kings? Is not Calno as Carchemish? Is not Hamath as Arpad? Is not Samaria as Damascus? One city is like another. None can stand before me, is his boast. Verse 10, "As my hand hath found the kingdoms of the idols, and whose graven images did excel them of Jerusalem and of Samaria, shall I not, as I have done unto Samaria and her idols, so do to Jerusalem and her idols?" And of course, remember, it was Assyria which did invade, conquer, and deport 10 tribed Israel from Samaria. Now he says he will do it also in Jerusalem, but this is not the old Jerusalem we are reading about, as we find out in the very next verse. Verse 12 of Isaiah 10. Wherefore it shall come to pass, that when the Lord hath performed his whole work upon Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, I will punish the fruit of the stout heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his high looks. So God was speaking about the end-time kingdom, Zion, not the old city of Jerusalem. In verse 32, it is called the daughter of Zion, which is a phrase used by several prophets when writing about the land of Israel in the end of the age. As I have shown before on these radio broadcasts, the Zion of Bible prophecy is here in America. We are that Zion. We are that Jerusalem. This is where Saxon Israel has been regathered under the Christian cross of Christ, and we have turned away. And now God is allowing an alien people here called Assyria to come in, rob and plunder us, and rule over us. So now God prophesies the Assyrians' destruction, not because he robbed our people, because that is what God intended to allow him to do, but because of his defiance of God, and because he thinks and boasts that he has done it all by himself. Listen to his boast. Verse 13 and 14. For he saith, by the strength of my hand I have done it, and by my wisdom, for I am prudent, and I have removed the bounds of the people, and I'll have more to say about that later, in relation to the laws and the boundaries of our states being changed, even this Indian takeover of much of our land. And I have removed the bounds of the people, and have robbed their treasures. And I have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man. And my hand hath found as a nest the riches of the people. And as one gathereth eggs that are left, have I gathered all the earth. And there was none that moved the wing, or opened the mouth, or peeped. Now, as I said earlier, this is obviously not a horde of petty thieves holding up grocery stores and filling stations. This is something much larger, and something largely hidden from the people. For none moved the wing, or opened the mouth, or peeped. You farmers or chicken raisers, have you ever tried to take eggs out from under a laying or a setting hen without her moving or peeping? It is not possible, unless you do it by stealth, so she does not know the egg is being taken. And there we come back to the banking and money system, and what it is doing to the American people. It is much more efficient than the armed robber, and most of the American people hardly know they are being robbed. For those of you who don't know how the banking system robs the people, let me explain it very briefly, and if I have time, I'll read a part of this out of their own publication, and then I'll tell you where to get their publication. Let's just consider your mortgage loan on your home. If you borrowed, let's say, $20,000 for 30 years, if you will total your required payments, you find they will come to over $50,000, $30,000 more than you borrowed. Except for a few $100s of employee expense and the paper and ink, lending that $20,000 in credit to you costs the bank nothing. Then to collect the $20,000 back plus the $30,000 excess, he must only make 360 entries in his record book as you bring in the $50,000 out of your wages. But most Americans will speak right up and say, but Pastor Emery, doesn't the banker just lend me other people's money on which he must pay them interest so that he doesn't make $30,000 but only a small portion of it? The answer is no. No, the bank does not lend out other people's money. Savings and loans do, but banks do not. Here is what he actually does, and then I'll read from a Federal Reserve pamphlet to verify it. What actually happens when a bank makes a $20,000 mortgage, is that he takes a $50,000 lien upon your future earnings. In exchange, he gives you a $20,000 deposit slip for your checking account, or he writes a paper check to the builder, which is then deposited in the builder's bank account. No money changes hands, nor is it necessary that it do so. All he needs is the paper and ink, for you see, you are the builder, then write checks against that deposit, which then go to other people who write checks on it, and that $20,000 continues on ad infinitum as checks, promises to pay, but no one ever actually gets paid. It remains as checks. It is called checkbook money, and it never existed until you agreed to pay $50,000 of your future earnings to the banker. Then he signed the $20,000 deposit slip to you. It cost him perhaps $100 initially for the entire transaction. The security which makes the $20,000 check or deposit slip good is not money he has or someone else's money he might have on deposit. It is your signed promise to pay to him $50,000 out of your wages over a period of 30 years. In case you think Pastor Emery is making this all up, let me read it to you directly from a Federal Reserve Bank publication, and then I will tell you how you can get a copy right from the Federal Reserve Bank. Quote, out of the Federal Reserve pamphlet, commercial banks play a vital role in this whole process because they are the only private institutions that can create money. And that word create is in quotation marks in the Federal Reserve pamphlet. Reading on, other private financial institutions act merely as intermediaries in channeling on to borrowers or others money entrusted to them by depositors, stockholders, and others, and I will insert here, they mean savings and loans, insurance companies, corporation stock sales, various co-ops, credit unions, and so on. Reading on, it is not so with commercial banks, whose actions can actually increase or decrease the volume of money in existence. Then they have three sentences about how the Federal Reserve itself buys U.S. bonds, and then that section ends with this about private commercial banks. Quote, if it makes loans, it will simply credit the checking accounts of the borrowers. New money in the form of additional demand deposits, checking accounts, will be created. End of quote. And again, they put a quotation mark around the word created. I am reading that from a pamphlet titled, The Federal Reserve Today. And it says on the pamphlet you can have a free copy by writing to, and here's the address, the Federal Reserve Bank, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. The title again, The Federal Reserve Today, free, from the Federal Reserve Bank, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. That zip code is 23261. You won't need a street address. This is just outside of Washington, D.C., and the post office will know where the Federal Reserve Bank is. Do not write to me for a copy. Get it direct from the people who create the money and then lend it to you for interest, telling how they do it. Our total national and personal debt was less than $10 billion in 1913, the year the Federal Reserve was formed. And now we owe the bankers over $3 trillion. Every man, woman, and child in America is 300 times further in debt today than was his grandfather 60 years ago. The total debt to the bankers is more than the total assessed valuation of all land and improvements in the United States. Was Thomas Jefferson thinking of that when he said, I believe banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies? Speaking of banks creating money on credit, Jefferson wrote, The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs. President Andrew Jackson spoke directly to a delegation of bankers who were attempting to get banking laws passed by Congress in the early 1800s, quote, "You are a den of vipers and thieves. I intend to rout you out, and by the eternal God, I will rout you out." Jackson did succeed in causing the cancellation of the bank charters, but they came back after Jackson was out of office and had the charters renewed. Many Americans do not know that at the time of the Revolution, there were only 3 banks in all of the American colonies, and the colonies were so prosperous they were rivaling England in world trade, all done without bankers. Today we are told we need banks in order to prosper and grow. Our people do not know that every bank is a parasite, sucking the life, blood, and wealth out of the community with their accursed usury and adding nothing to the nation but debt upon our children and our children's children. The money power, prophetic Assyria, mystery Babylon, rules America today. They create money out of paper and ink, then lend it to us and draw usury on it for generations to come. They have found as a nest the riches of the people, and as one gathereth eggs that are left, they have gathered all the earth, and none moved the wing, or opened the mouth, or peeped. But there we go, condemning the bankers. And God does not condemn them for their robbery, for as we read, God already indicated in Isaiah 10 that it was He who would let them rob and spoil the hypocritical and disobedient Israel people. They rule over us because of our sin, our transgression, our refusal to make God's laws the laws of the nation. This is Pastor Emery. God willing, we will continue on in Isaiah 10 next week and in some of the other prophecies about America, Israel's deliverance from the Babylonian money power. Until next week, when I return, God willing, this is Pastor Emery saying goodbye. God bless you. Read your Bibles and pray for Christian America.